Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse, a radio show devoted to our favorite companion pet, the dog. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, coming to you from Washington Township, New Jersey. Thursday in the Doghouse has been airing for the last year and a half right here on WNJC 1360 AM from 10 to 10:30 every Thursday morning. If you've missed any previous shows, please visit my website to hear them. Just go to www.jerseydogtrainer.com and click on the menu button marked Rini's Radio Show. You'll see a list of podcasts on there with and each list of podcasts has a list of categories. Click on the topic that interests you and listen to these wonderfully educational programs. Over the course of the last year and a half, I've had the pleasure of interviewing the best of the best experts in this field. Today, I'm very happy to have as my guest, Dr. Nicholas Dodman. Dr. Dodman is one of the world's most noted and celebrated veterinary behaviorists. He's a faculty member of the Tufts Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. He founded their animal clinic, one of the first of its kind, in 1986. He's written several acclaimed best-selling books, some of which are The Dog Who Loved Too Much, The Cat Who Cried for Help, and If Only They Could Speak. My personal favorite book is called The Well-Adjusted Dog. Dr. Dodman has talked to us before about canine obsessive-compulsive disorders, fears, and phobias. But today, we'll be talking about the use of electronic shock collars and whether or not this is an effective tool to use when training our dogs. We'll talk to Dr. Dodman in just a moment, but first, please let me tell you what services I offer in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Dr. Dodman. It's so nice to have you back in the doghouse again.
Well, nice to be back in the doghouse.
Our topic is about shock collars, and I have to tell you, in the state of New Jersey, the use of electronic shock collars has become extremely popular among many, many dog trainers. What is your experience with this? Do you find that using these collars is helpful in training?
The answer is no, and that is because I don't use them, and I don't use them, you know, working from first principles. Basically, I do not use what's called positive punishment that you could otherwise call corporal punishment.
Okay.
You know, the equivalent of spanking a child. Anything that sort of inflicts pain. We don't use any of those techniques at all. So I'm speaking as the voice of inexperience with electric shock, but working from first principles, I wouldn't use it, don't condone it, and think it's kind of mindless.
Good, because we're certainly on the same page with that. Many e-collar trainers, which is what they call themselves, state that when they start obedience training 4-month-old puppies on these collars, that they only use very low stimulation levels just to get the puppy's attention. If the puppy isn't actually feeling pain at this point, would you then approve of that low stimulation training?
No, because, you know, if you think about it, if you had, you know, an extremely low stimulus, if it was so low, would be that the puppy would not pay any attention at all. And you gradually increase the frequency until it has, you know, an unpleasant tingling sensation, you know, on its skin and its neck. And, you know, I just think that's a really not a great way to get attention. Basically, just it's a level of pain going from 0 to 10, and, you know, you come in at level 1 or 2, but it's still doing something physical. I mean, if they think that really is what they're doing, why don't they just use, you know, a buzzer? You know, there are collars that either vibrate or just make a sound,
mm-hmm.
You know, that you can press a button, you know, something like this, it just makes a little noise, and that would attract the dog's attention. Why do they have to go to electric shock?
Correct, I agree. But with the buzzer also, could that be a negative stimulus in itself?
It depends on how you use it.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a buzz and that focuses the dog, turns and looks at the trainer and the person rewards them, you could argue that is working almost like a clicker in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
That it depends on how you use it. I mean, if the dog does the right thing and you could buzz it and reward it, I mean, mm-hmm. that would be a positive thing. If you do it, get the dog's attention and then reward after that, it's sort of not quite the same thing. It's not really a secondary reinforcer,
mm-hmm.
but nevertheless, it's not, you know, a horrendous use of something like electric shock.
Okay. I also know that puppies are introduced to the electronic invisible fences at age 4 months. Do you have opinions about these fences? Or that would be any different? I mean, is it still the same thing?
It's not quite as bad in the sense that, you know, once a puppy is trained, or let's call it a young dog is trained to invisible fence, that they will often avoid it, and so there's no further punishment. But the fact is, to get to that point, you have to train them to the fence.
Right.
And I've witnessed that training, and what they do basically is put the dog on leash and walk it through the buzz, usually make a little buzzing noise,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes on further and it gets a shock. And the trainer that I saw training a dog to the fence said that in order to get them trained, you need to crank up the shock so it's really unpleasant, and then they learn very quickly with like a couple of electric shocks, and that's all they ever need to get. But still, you're doing pretty horrible things. You know, most parents wouldn't agree to do that to their children. You know,
right.
If you want them to pay attention to homework, all you've got to do is put on a electric shock collar, and if they don't pay attention, you give them a couple of very severe shocks.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, just the buzz will make them concentrate because they know what comes next.
Right.
I mean, but there is another school of thought now that says you can start with a lower sort of shock, as you were talking about, and that's okay. But there are some people who say that's not right, because what's going to happen is the dog's going to sort of desensitize that the low shock. If you gradually crank it up, they'll learn to tolerate it. So the argument goes on, but in the meantime, I think invisible fence, first of all, should not be used in, except as a very last resort when it's, you know, life-saving
mm-hmm.
of dogs or motorists going by
mm-hmm.
and there's no other solution and training has failed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be honest with you. I have met many, many dogs that have been contained behind an electric fence, and every one of them, well, of course, I've been called for a reason, but have developed a lot of behavior problems, a lot of emotional problems. And I think that even though the dog learns to avoid the shock, sometimes the motivator for getting out of the fence, especially with a terrier
mm-hmm.
or a herding breed, it becomes so strong that they'll endure the shock and hardly feel it because they want so much to get out and get to whatever it is that they're focusing on, like a rabbit or a squirrel. or whatever. So I don't find these things to be 100% effective at all.
Well, I have talked to one of the invisible fence type electronic fence people in the past, and they wanted me to do some research, which I did not do. But they said that they had some problems that they would like me to investigate. And they said, you know, at the one end of the spectrum, the dogs that you were just talking about, they call them the hounds from hell. And that is the ones who will just blast out through the fence, taking the electric shock, and, you know, to go chase a squirrel or another dog. And so in that case, the fence is not working. And those dogs maybe have a very low pain threshold and the motivation is very high. I mean, you could imagine, you know, some of the sort of pit fighting dogs have a very high pain threshold, and their motivation to keep going through pain is stronger than some other breeds. So that kind of thing is a problem. That wasn't the end of the spectrum they wanted me to look at. At the other end of the spectrum, if you take a dog who is, you know, really kind of the almost the ideal sort of soft and squishy family dog, the one who's kind of cute and a little bit sensitive and follows you around and looks lovingly into your eyes, these dogs, when subjected to the electric shock, they become what in the trade is known as the porch sitters. So they will go outside after the invisible fence is installed and they've received their first few shocks, and they don't, it's not just they go up to the boundary of the fence, they sit on the porch. They won't even go in the yard.
Right.
So severely affected by the electric shock. So they wanted me to explore what is it about the porch sitters. And I would say that any dog who shows any shyness around people, any dog who has, say, submissive urination, any dog who has separation anxiety or is uncomfortable during thunderstorms, any dog with a compulsive disorder, and that's a lot of dogs, is at risk of becoming a porch sitter and will become sort of psychologically damaged by the use of an electric fence.
I hate these products. I mean, I just have to really tell everybody that, because I see such bad stuff out there.
I also get some tougher dogs, you know, some not the sensitive, you know, shrinking violet ones who become porch sitters, but I see some dogs who are contained by the fence. They're sort of in the middle group. They're not breaking through it. They're not sitting on the porch. But what they do is they know the line, and the fence companies even say this is a very natural product because it very clearly defines a dog's territory. When the territory is that clearly defined, almost like an invisible line around the property, they will patrol that line, and anybody or anything that breaks in there, there seems to be, and the people have written accounts of sort of apparently ratifying this, and this is certainly my perception in the clinic, that there is an increase in territorial aggression because the territory is so clearly defined, and maybe the dog can't get out. But anybody who inadvertently walks inside that area is, by these particular types of dogs, will be very unwelcome and will be subject to enhanced territorial aggression.
See, I always look for what the dog is associating when he's behind the fence. I've had clients who have called me with dogs who have suddenly become aggressive toward people. I had a client years ago who had a beautiful border collie who suddenly, out of nowhere, started to become aggressive toward children. She clipped a couple of them, and since they had the aggressive the electronic invisible fence, she seemed to be getting angrier and angrier with those children, because that is what she was focusing on when she was out in her yard. And so I'm always worried about associative learning. So you talk about territorial behavior and territorial aggression. I do see that, but I'm wondering if that doesn't happen because the dog becomes so angry with everything and everyone outside of the fence.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, it's like it's just out of reach and you can't get it.
Right.
And you do this fence running barking, and of course people who go by, then your barking has worked. It's driven them away. It's like a real fence in that sense. But because it's so clearly defined, it's like having a chain link fence around would have the same effect, that the dog can run the fence, has increased sort of confidence behind the fence, learns and builds on that. And then when somebody breaks through because they don't see the invisible fence, now they're subject to this increased aggression. But, you know, there are other things too, like, for example, a long time ago, there's a famous psychologist called Seligman who did experiments with dogs who received electric shocks, which to them were, you know, just the dog did not know really why it was getting the shock, which is often the case, especially when unskilled hands, say those of owners, are applying electric shock.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that following electric shock, the behavior that a dog typically shows is running about frantically, defecating, urinating, and howling,
wow.
And so on. This is not really what you want for your pet animal.
No, absolutely not. We know, you and I know, that there are developmental stages that puppies go through, and we also know that there are a couple of stages called fear periods or fear stages.
Yeah.
From my reading and from my research, I've learned that a second fear period can occur anytime between the 4th month and the 12th month. And so what worries me is if they introduce electronic shock training or invisible fence training at 4 months, what happens then if the dog is either entering a fear stage or if this shock can bring it on? What then happens to this dog's future development as a result of this?
Well, that's right. And the answer is it's not really known. I mean, the developmental periods that are most for acquiring fear are not clearly known in dogs. I mean, certainly there seems to be one that was identified in the famous Scott and Fuller work, which was around about the 7th week, also continuing in the sensitive period of learning, maybe going through 12 weeks, there's sort of gradual acquisition of fears, and there may well be a secondary period, as you say, so between, say, 3 months and 6 months, and you're just saying around 4 months. But because these fear learning periods are so poorly defined in the dog, completely different, by the way, from people where they're known to almost to the day, it just doesn't make sense to do something during one of these periods when you don't really know what effect it's going to have and what stage and what fear period the dog's going through.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what you're doing, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Nobody really does know about the fear periods, and we don't know about the personalities of the dogs and how sensitive they are, and I think you can do a huge amount of damage.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's also the other paper, of course, by the famous Samuel Courson, somewhere in the 60s, I believe, where he gave dogs electric shocks. I believe it was through the floor of the cage.
Ooh.
You know, ooh. Just, you know, they get a shock.
Yeah.
And when these shocks were given on a random basis that they never knew what's happening, which is, as I say, often the case. The dog doesn't know why he's getting a shock at that particular time. He's in the middle of, you know, sort of barking at a squirrel or something, and then an electric shock to him. It doesn't make any sense. These random electric shocks cause hyperkinesis, they call it, which is like an ADHD syndrome.
Yes.
And increased aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I should say that electric shock collars are disapproved, you know, not approved of, and argued against by the Humane Society of the United States. Most behaviorists, qualified behaviorists would disapprove of
mm-hmm.
their use.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are really is just a dirty, quick fix, the kind of thing that you might see on television, you know, the quick whip of a choke chain and a dog stopping doing what it's doing and cowering into submission. Because the definition of punishment is something which decreases the frequency of a behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If all you want to teach your dog is how to decrease behaviors, you know, how to not do this and not do that, a very negative approach, then you can apply punishment. But punishment actually, as 2 Nobel laureates have said before, teaches a dog nothing except how to avoid the punishment. I mean, this is really negative.
Right.
I know they're used in some cases in humans, that where you've got sort of mentally disturbed young children, you know, so maybe older children, I don't know what age, but say in the sort of 7 to 12 or up to 15 age, in sort of mental institutions, maybe that's the wrong word, but so some kind of institutionalized kids who have really difficult hyperkinetic and aggressive behavior, they sometimes fit them with electric shock devices, and they can deliver electric shock to those children. But it's very contentious, and I think very damaging to those children even. But, I mean, their argument would be, well, how else are you going to control them when they're completely out of control? But, you know, you really wouldn't want that, say, for normal children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't want it for even disturbed children, but, you know, if you sent your child to a special school to increase learning and help them get into college, and you found that the way they made them study was by fitting them with an electric ankle bracelet or a neck collar that would, they'd electrify it and shock them whenever they were doing something they shouldn't be doing. I mean, this is not really the way you want to go with a pet dog, or actually any dog, I would think.
I agree with you. I think it's totally inhumane, and there is no quick fix out there. Dr. Dodman, we know that. I mean, you have to work through it, with whether it's with a child or whether it's with a dog. These problem behaviors don't happen overnight normally, and so it takes a little time to fix them if we can, and not with shock. I hate it. I just hate it.
Well, I think Conrad Lorenz, who was one of the Nobel Prize winners who said that punishment teaches a dog nothing, I mean, he said about training that art and science aren't enough. Patience is the basic stuff.
Yep.
And it's patience that people don't have time with. You know, they just, that we are impatient. We're this sort of TV, quick ads, got to happen, snap, 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 everything's got to happen right now, computers have to be fast, everything's so fast that these impatient people, they want to see results now. They watch TV shows where the dog's jumping and the next thing he's not because he's cowering. This is the kind of stuff we want. This is sort of, you know, anti-intellectual, you know, anti-patience. This particular age is almost like everyone has ADD, and they can't be bothered to take the time to train their dog, so they just train it not to do what... I mean, the approach is this, is that if you have a barking dog, the logical thing to do is to reward the dog for being quiet.
Correct.
But what they do is they punish it with electric shock for barking. And these two approaches are 180 degrees diametrically opposed. If a dog's barking, should you punish it for barking, which will commit you to a lifetime of punishment, because once punishment stops, the dog will just go back to doing what it was doing before. It hasn't learned anything.
Right.
Except how to avoid the punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to train a dog to be silent, which is positive. You're training a behavior of being quiet and maybe sitting and paying attention. That makes much more sense to me than the other approach.
Yeah, that's what positive training is, Dr. Dodman. That's what we do. You know, I have to tell you...
Unfortunately, there's not enough of you, because I see people coming into my clinic and I say, so what did you do? And they say, well, we went to this guy, you know, on the South Shore, and he just fitted my dog with electric shock collar. I mean, right off the bat. And as soon as they say they've been to see this person, I know that whatever the behavior problem was, the answer is an electric shock.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, on TV, whatever the problem is, it's a problem with the pack and you've got to be the leader, and, you know, you're not a good enough leader, so you've got to wail on your dog, even for separation anxiety, because he's acting out. I mean, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all lack of knowledge type situation.
Mm-hmm. I had a case, well, I didn't work with it. I had to send it to a veterinary behaviorist. A fella called me about a German Shepherd, a five-year-old German Shepherd who was put on the electric shock collar at age 4 months by a trainer, and for 5 years the gentleman used the shock collar anytime he took the dog out. And I think he had the collar on him at times during when he was in the home also. He called me because he said two months prior, he had taken the collar off thinking that, well, the dog is 5 years old, I haven't had any problems with him, I'll just take the collar off. And suddenly the dog started biting people. He didn't wear the collar. He would take him for a walk. He would lunge out at people, and he would bite them, and he was also biting his wife. So here you go. To me, and you, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I think that this dog had built up such anger about the collar and had learned to avoid the shock, and so that was keeping him to be quote-unquote well-behaved. Once the collar was removed, that inhibition was gone, and now he was more aggressive because he could be.
Well, you could argue it the other way around, not that I would, but you could say, well, here's a dog who's perfectly well behaved when he's wearing a collar, you take it off and he falls apart, so therefore he should wear the collar.
Oh, God, no.
But the thing is, I've seen these collars worn. I've had people come in, and I've seen people send me photographs of what the collar sometimes does to the neck, and they have these two big prongs, and if people leave the collar on for a long period of time, it can actually erode a big ulcer into the dog's neck.
Oh, my God.
It's just awful. I mean, I'm not sure whether they're electric burns
yes,
or whether
they're
just from trauma, but huge holes in the dog's neck sometimes appear. Mm-hmm. So I just don't like them at all.
No.
And like I said, you say, how do you find them? And I don't find them because I don't use them and I don't like them. And everything I hear about them, I don't like.
Yeah, I agree with
you. I do occasionally hear a story like you just said, like the dog is well-behaved wearing it, but... You know, and I listen, but it's just it's not something that I would do. There are other ways of getting your dog under control than delivering electric shock. There are other ways of controlling children than wailing on them with a paddle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so actually, just heard a couple of years back in California, they banned physical punishment of children under five. My only question was,
why under five?
Why not? Just ban physical, corporal punishment of children.
Yeah.
You could just imagine the parents sitting there rubbing their hands waiting for the child to turn five so they can give them a good paddling.
That's the truth. I mean, I have to admit to you, I mean, the way I was raised in the 50s, and in those days I think that's how children were disciplined, by hitting them with straps and slapping them and stuff, and so that's how I grew up also, and it takes your self-confidence away. It creates emotional problems, so why not with dogs? I think it would affect them exactly the same way, and I see that every day, and I'm sure you see a lot of it yourself.
Yeah, and actually, you know, my dog... Rusty, he's a perfect, I mean, I've got to say, and maybe I just lucked out. I got him from a shelter, of course,
mm-hmm.
and he's just a perfect dog. And he just looks adoringly into our eyes. He follows around. We can leave him alone. He looked like he was going in the direction of separation anxiety until we got him and just instilled confidence in him. He's great with people. He's great with dogs. He mm-hmm. does what he's told. Mm-hmm. No real training, you know, but if I say to him, hey, wait, he just stops.
Good.
Never trained him to wait.
Uh-huh.
We're out walking last night and there was another dog and they were roughing around. It was getting a little bit more than I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the people getting a bit nervous. They were just playing, but it was too rough. So I said, hey, stop it. And he's like, boom, come straight back by my side.
Isn't that lovely?
He's just a perfect dog. And mm-hmm. I've never used any electric shock. I've never used any choke chain. I've never used any prong collars. I've never chain jerked him. I've never done anything. He just conformed to actually two good leaders, myself and my wife. We're both very kind to him, and he gets all kinds of privileges that some of the dogs perhaps wouldn't be allowed if they were acting out. I mean, he sleeps on the bed, and he's really a dear. He's just a love. He's just so cuddly, mm-hmm. and he gets all kinds of treats and spoiling. It's led to nothing except for a very obedient dog with a very strong bond with his owners.
Right. And
if I put an electric shock collar on him, that beautiful bond would be completely destroyed.
Yep, and I think that's what happens a lot in the homes. People don't realize that they are destroying any trust that the dog would have in them, because their life is full of pain. And also, there's another factor we have to consider, and that's where the dog feels like he has absolutely no control over what happens to him, especially...
That's what Seligman was investigating, that psychologist that I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
He was investigating a condition called learned helplessness.
Right.
And I've seen trainers who are hardline trainers not even know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the effect they were having, like one, who shall remain nameless, was out in front of our hospital, and he was demonstrating what he did to me. I mean, in the very early days of behavior when... You know, I was more of the sort of academic, and I hadn't seen so much of the practical. And he said, this is how I do it. And he took a choke chain, he popped it a couple of times. The dog went flat.
Wow.
He dropped on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the trainer looked at me and said, yeah, he's in what we call shutdown. That's learned helplessness.
Yeah.
Which is actually a model for depression.
Absolutely. And I think that you know, not having control of... this situation has a lot of fallout. And who wants your dog to shut down? That's not good behavior. We see that on TV a lot. I mean, that's what you do see when a TV trainer pops and jerks the dog or pulls him on the ground with his two fingers in his neck and says, okay, you see, now he's being submissive. Heck no. I mean, the dog is just shutting down because he wants to avoid punishment. And that's what people have to understand. We don't want that in our dogs. That's not why we got dogs in the first place.
There was one segment on TV of a trainer who, you know, kicked a dog and it turned around to bite him, and then he hung it.
Ooh.
And it fell down on the ground, and actually he hung it so severely that the dog was lying on its side on the ground with its mouth wide open, gasping, with its tongue blue,
right,
its pupils dilated, and as an ex-anesthesiologist, I could see that the dog was in a situation called, what we call, he was doing hypoxic, low oxygen, gasping, and he was very close to death. Trader looks at the camera and said, "This is what we call the calm, submissive state."
I saw that video.
And that's been a sponge that's
awful.
Wiped off the face of the TV. You can't find that anywhere because it's bad press.
It is. It's horrible. It's just horrible. And I don't know. It just hurts my heart when I think of these things. And that's why we do what we do. We're out there in the field, and you're out there in your practice, and we just have to help fix these dogs who have had extremely bad bad past lives, and they're affected emotionally, and they're not robots, and we don't want a robot in the home. We want a happy, healthy, goofy dog, and that's what I know I want. So,
we're training pet dogs, so I think that group, the Association of Pet Dog Trainers,
yes,
I think that's a great name,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, most people have dogs as pets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not military dogs, they're not police working dogs. They're, you know, pet dogs, or sometimes the pet dog becomes a therapy dog or assistant dog or something. I mean, that's what you want. You want a good relationship with that dog. This is not an automaton. This is not something that's working for you to help you stave off, you know, attacks or something.
Mm-hmm.
This is just your pet.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
And as such, it's almost like a, I think one of the trainers refers to her dogs as fur children. You know, so they're part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people out there listening, they say, well, you know, I don't care what he says, because I think if you don't occasionally threaten your children, you know, spare the rods, you'll spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same with my dog. Well, I just don't agree. You know, there's always two sides to every story, and I'm just on this side 100% that you should not use corporal punishment for children,
right,
or dogs.
Right. Just as a side note, before we close, you and I talked about a case that you will be getting regarding a dog that has a really severe issue, and she's doing things that some humans do, and that's self-mutilation. Unfortunately, I have to tell you, the owner, until she got to me, had spoken to several other trainers. One of them promised that he could help her dog using a shock collar. So she knew right away not to follow that advice, and she called me, and then I gave her your information. So hopefully that dog will get better and certainly will not be using a shock collar.
Yeah, these painful methods of control can sometimes apparently work because, you know, a dog will try to avoid the punishment. And as I said, we've destroyed the relationship. But it's a little bit like the way that these Middle Eastern leaders in the past, or maybe still sometimes in the present, have controlled their countries, that basically if you step out of line, if you show any signs of what we call freedom,
right,
if you become an individual with a personality that, and you do something, you could be punished with things like getting your hands cut off, you could be killed, you could be blinded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so everyone's walking around in fear, mm-hmm, towing the line,
mm-hmm,
behind,
yep,
the despotic leader.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I don't want to be a despotic leader of my dog. I don't want him to do what he's got to do, or else.
That's right.
And I want him to follow me because he wants to. I want to be a good leader, protector, and friend.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was always saying, which I thought was a good line, about our children, it's not sufficient just to be your child's friend. You also need to be a good parent, which means, you know, keeping them out of trouble and insisting that they do things that are, you know, helpful to them and helpful. I mean, they can't, for example, sit up all night watching TV when they've got school the next day. They need to eat healthy food, and they have to do the homework. But you don't make them do those things by smacking them around the face.
Mm-hmm.
You do it through sort of leaderly love and affection. You just make it happen. You have a stern side and your fun side.
Yeah, that's right. Dr. Dodman, if people are listening and they want more information about your books, or they want more information about your practice and what you do, possibly doing your you know, contacting you with a problem that they're having, please give out all of your information so that they can contact you.
Well, it's very simple, really. I mean, probably the simplest way to get all the information is just to go onto my website, which is The Pet Docs, all one word, T-H-E-P-E-T-D-O-C-S.com. And And on there, you'll find a little bit of blurb about my wife, who's the other pet doc, and myself. You will find a list of products, which includes books, and soon to include, actually, hasn't happened right now, but some of the seminars that I do around the country. One of them was filmed by Torza Video when I talked with Dr. Dunbar. There's some there, which I haven't got on my site. I should really put that on my site. But there's another one where I just talked in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the entire three-day event given solely by me was videotaped. That's being compiled into a DVD and will be available through the website in the very near future.
Mm-hmm.
Plus some seminars I'm going to give in the fall, probably one in Florida, and I've sort of been trying to line up one in Canada. So
mm-hmm.
I've talked a couple of times in New Jersey, as you know.
Yes, I do.
But, you know, I did Washington, D.C., so I'm kind of going around. I think I've got two more seminars which have yet to go up on that website, but they will. The books are already there,
mm-hmm.
and some other useful information.
That's wonderful. Dr. Dodman, you're such a wonderful person to talk to. You're a blessing to have with us, and I so appreciate your call. You're able to talk about this. This is a very controversial subject, and I'm glad that you were willing to talk to me about it.
Well, we're the Mutual Admiration Society because I think you're also the best.
Thank you very much, and you have a great day, and we'll be talking soon.
Okay, Renee.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There's Duke telling me we're running out of time. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into Thursday in the Doghouse today. Don't forget to tune in again next week from 10 to 10:30. We're here at WNJC 1360 AM. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you later.